All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I visit every day just to keep up to date on any key data points and some of the nuances within different sectors and markets. We're going to focus a lot on currencies to wrap up this first hour because the US dollar had a very tough week again this week. And quite frankly, where it closes, we're not quite at the close yet, but if it closes in this lower 92 level on the dollar index, that's going to be the lowest weekly close since back in 2018. We're still viewing that 91.75 level as pretty important, as that was the intra-week low at the very tail end of August. Mark, let's start off with the dollar sell-off. After the election, you'd even called the dollar selling off after the election, as we chatted about a week or two ago. But what's important to note about this sell-off, and more importantly, do you see us continuing lower?
The dollar did have like one of its toughest weeks of the year. And the selling came quickly before the polls even really closed. And what's definitely strikes me about this, the market had really set up for this. Think about like the Canadian dollar. On Monday, the Canadian dollar put in an outside down day. That is to say, it rose above last Friday's high, reversed lower, and closed below Friday's lows. This was a bearish sign. And this is returned at almost at 134, and we're finishing a week near 130. So I think this was partly a broad-based U.S. dollar sell-off, and I think that it's that old story that I've been trying to keep people focused on, this framing of this. What's going on is that the U.S. is, and this is not just now, but projecting ahead, the U.S. is going to have a large budget deficit and a large current account deficit. In such an environment, it needs higher interest rates to draw savers. But because we can't give those higher interest rates, given the conditions, low inflation, weak recovery, that the dollar has to sort of act as a shock absorber. And the dollar fell against all the major currencies this past week. Like you say, it's not exactly the close yet, but out of the currencies, the Japanese yen, which fell to 104 for the first time since March, was really the weakest of the major currencies. It only gained 1.3% against the dollar. What impressed me the most was the Australian dollar. It gained about 3.5% this week, and that's despite a rate cut and extended QE by the central bank. Sterling had a decent week too, up 1.6%, and there the Bank of England also eased policy. That's why I think that the fact that these currencies rallied despite the central bank's easing really tells me this is a weak dollar story rather than a strong foreign currency story.
Isn't that crazy, though, to consider that central banks are coming out and easing their policy even more, as we did hear from the Fed this week, and they essentially just copied their prior statement, but that their currencies moved up as central banks got easier. It really is just the market looking ahead and seeing the issues that the U.S. is going to have, and probably the fiscal bill, the spending packages that they're also going to be issuing here, too.
Yeah, I think that generally last week what we really saw has been like the reflation story. Lower yields, rising stocks, a recovery in oil prices, a weaker dollar. I think that it all makes sense if you think that there's not going to be much of a change in the status quo, and the sequence by which the central banks are easing doesn't really matter that much. For sure, RBA, Bank of England, cut, eased policy this week. The ECB is probably the next of the major central banks to ease. They've practically committed themselves to it in December. But, you know, and this is one of the things that Powell said repeatedly in his press conference. The Federal Reserve is buying $80 billion of treasuries a month and $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities. Doesn't seem like any central bank is really topping that right now.
So the Fed, then, is still one of the easiest out there. How much of this election and the kind of split result that it looks like we're going to get is playing into the markets being stronger and the dollar also being weaker?
Yeah, no, I think there's two elements for the election. One is just get it past us And as soon as, that's why I mentioned about what happened on Monday in the Canadian dollar. As soon as the, this has been like the election itself has been hanging over the market. As soon as it was passed, it was like pent up activity. But the election itself, the results, what does it look like? So ironically, as we wind down the week, we don't know the results yet fully, but it looks like Biden's going to become president, and it looks like the Senate's going to be very close. That might not be decided till January, and the House of Representatives, the Democrats might have lost a couple of seats. What this essentially means, I think, points to is that there's no blue wave, and I think the blue wave, rightly or wrongly, has been painted to be more dramatic changes, less business friendly. Higher corporate taxes, rapid movement towards the Green New Deal in some fashion. I'm not sure that characterization is right, but I think it's generally that's the way people perceived it. And so that the fact that it's not a blue wave means that we can have the same types of pro-business policies without the tax hikes, basically. And so I think that that means also interest rates stay low. And so even with the U.S., we're talking about 75 basis points on our 10-year bond. Why not buy stocks, especially after they had that big pullback? 10-15% might be that buying opportunity people were looking for in those fangs.
Yeah, possibly. Either way, though, do you think that we're going to be seeing any government spending bill this year? Or is it going to have to wait until next year when Trump is fully out of office and when Biden takes power?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think that the Senate will take up a what they call is a skinny bill, which might be $500 billion. Isn't that funny? What Americans call skinny, $500 billion. But it turns out that, you know, we did get a good jobs report just before the weekend. It was better than people expected. Unemployment rate dropped from 7.9% to 6.9%. I mean, put that in perspective, in Canada, from 9% to 8.9%. Canada still had a strong jobs report, but the U.S., just the sudden and sharp decline, I think, in the unemployment rate, I think, speaks to less pressure on the Republicans to deliver a big package. Whether this can get over the same problem we had before the election or not, it's a different story. And like I say, the Senate, 100 seats in our Senate, 96 seats are more or less decided. Two seats have still, we're sort of waiting for the results, too close to call. And two seats might have to have, and these are both in Georgia, might have to have a runoff in early January. So my best guess is that we don't get a fiscal package yet, but we do get it next year in the first quarter, and it's for about $1 trillion.
Okay, so much, much lower than what the Democrats wanted, but any spending package, I think, would be looked favorably on by the market, right? Anything that gets through, some of that money naturally ends up in financial markets.
Yeah, I think that what people will be looking at is there any assistance for state and local governments? Is there an extended unemployment package, unemployment compensation package? And what about more of those, what we had, these PPP loans for like an employment protection scheme to help businesses? And these are these grant loans that then would be forgiven. And so I think we do get this fiscal stimulus, and that's what it's going to be aimed at, I think, is more of small businesses and households.
Okay. So what matters for the markets then outside of just this spending bill whenever it gets passed? In all fairness, you can also say that the market is anticipating this, so maybe it won't have a big impact in terms of market moves when it is announced. Right now, news headlines still dominated by the election. Let's put that behind us. Is it COVID cases? Is it economic data? Is it other central bank moves? What actually matters?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I feel like kind of silly saying this, but I'm not sure that any of that matters in the short run. We do get the U.S. inflation measures next week, CPI, PPI. China reports their inflation measures as well. I think that now it's a question of, it's not going to be economic data, because remember, we've already got Q3 GDP numbers more or less behind us. All the central banks, all the major central banks met next week. We've got New Zealand meeting and the Reserve Bank of Mexico. But I don't see these as the driving impulse. I think it's a question of momentum. And I think that some of the momentum indicators are a bit stretched as we finished the week with the dollar, different dollar pairs are sort of flirting with their Bollinger Bands. So I think that one is just current positions and momentum. And secondly, I do think this, you know, as the week winds down, we're hearing reports from Denmark that some COVID mutation first exposed by them in minks might make a vaccine more difficult. But we're not seeing much of a market reaction to that. I think that we'll see what happens over the weekend as this news story develops. But that's what I'd be focusing on, is just sort of the trading basics, really. You just had a big move in the markets. It looks like it can continue, but it's a bit stretched in the short run.
Isn't that the story of these markets in general, though, is that you can keep on making the argument that the moves have been stretched to the upside?
Well, yeah, though we did have a setback. And like that's why what impresses me, like think about what happened on the day of the election in the U.S., the euro. As soon as the polls closed, the euro tested 116. That's the lower end of its range. And so what happens? We snap back violently, and we finish this week near, say, 118.80. And so we go from the low end of the range to the upper end of the range. And I think that as traders, we often have to ask ourselves, are we going to play for the breakout? And I think that rather than chase the market, I think that especially in the early part of the week, that we get some consolidation or a pullback. And I think that the risk reward changes a bit as we get to these upper end of the range. Last time we were above 119, we got close to 120, and the Europeans expressed some concern about the strength of the euro. This week we broke through, like I mentioned, that yen 104 level. And so the dollar then is at roughly 8-month lows against the yen. And the Japanese prime minister and the governor of the central bank expressed some concern talking about the need for stability in the foreign exchange market. So I think that the risk reward changes as we approach these extremes, but dollar yen did break out, and at 104 that was support is now acting as resistance.
Interesting, but we always need to be aware, right, of central banks, of governments, of anybody trying to talk these markets in a certain direction. That still does cause some short-term volatility. Mark, wrap us up with your broad strategy when it's coming to managing your own portfolio. How are you staying protected, but how are you ensuring that you're not missing out on just this steady rise in markets?
Yeah, no, I think that's a tough thing. I try to, even though I help speculators and play for short-term moves professionally, with my own, I try to be an investor, a value investor, which means that I try to buy on sell-offs, basically. And the only thing I've done in the past couple of weeks is I bought Apple through the options market, really. I thought it was cheaper in the options market. And so I took advantage of that pullback in the FANGs, and I took Apple just because I thought that the problems it faces don't seem to be like game changers. But I think that the general approach and the principle here is that you follow, you do your homework on stocks, you have a sense of where value is. And when a stock that you identify as having value sells off sharply, I think you have to think, well, is this the opportunity? And so I think people have to do their homework. And we can't all be short-term momentum traders if we're trying to put together like long-term savings.
All right. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. That does it for the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the second hour, I am focusing more on the precious metals and especially the stocks. So everyone stick around for that second hour. And again, let me know what you think of the new format of the weekend show. Mark, thanks so much for your time this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.